I'm Matthew Smith, Vermont Edition producer, and I wanted to let you know that the podcast you're about to listen to has been edited for clarity and brevity. Thanks for listening and enjoy.
This is Vermont Edition. I'm Bob Kinzel. It's been a very busy month for Congressman Peter Welch. As a member of the House Intelligence Committee, this week he questioned former special counsel Robert Mueller about Russian efforts to influence the 2016 presidential campaign in favor of Donald Trump. And after several months of reviewing the issue of impeachment, Welch announced that he's come to the conclusion that the president is guilty of, quote, high crimes and misdemeanors and should be impeached.
My alarm is that this is extremely dangerous to our democracy. And it's clear that the president has embraced this approach of being brutally divisive. And our country needs a commander-in-chief. It needs a president who, under the oath of office, is about bringing us together and to help us solve our problems. It's the guardrails of a democracy that are under assault here.
Are Democrats who support the impeachment of the president playing right into his strategy of making the 2020 election a referendum on impeachment? Or is it a good idea to have this be the major focus of the next election? With us today to discuss this and many other important issues is Congressman Peter Welch. Congressman, welcome back to Vermont Edition.
Thank you.
Congressman, in order to impeach the president of the United States, the U.S. Constitution in Article 2, Section 4 says, quote, the president shall be removed from office for conviction of treason, bribery, or other high crimes and misdemeanors. Which one of these three charges do you think Donald Trump is guilty of?
Well, the high crimes and misdemeanors is not defined. A misdemeanor can be a traffic offense. So what the Constitution does is give the members of Congress the ultimate responsibility to decide what is an impeachable offense. And it's one of the two very awesome powers and responsibilities that a member of Congress has. The other, of course, is to declare war. My view on impeachment that I came to slowly – because I think we have to give enormous deference to the outcome of an election, whether we like the outcome or we don't, is fundamentally that the president has violated his oath of office to preserve, protect, and defend the Constitution. And there's a number of ways, in my view, that he's done that. The Mueller report focuses, of course, on obstruction and documents significant and aggressive obstruction on the part of the president. But what I've seen even after the Mueller report began, is that he's acting in a way where he's above the law and beyond accountability. First, he's totally stonewalling Congress when it comes to Congress exercising its oversight responsibility that applies to any chief executive. And our whole system of checks and balances is based on the proposition that to be accountable, you have to answer questions, provide documents, and otherwise you're beyond the rule of law. Also, every citizen is entitled to the full protection of the law. And what the president is doing in attacking people on the basis of their faith, on the basis of their ethnic origin, is attacking people who are entitled to the full protection of the law, not because of what they believe or because they're a political opponent, but because of who they are. And all of us are created equal. That's respected under the Constitution, and all of us are entitled to the full protection of the law. And what I'm seeing with the president is that he is doubling down on this divisive approach where he's attacking people on the basis of who they are, and he's keeping himself as though he is not subject to the constitutional responsibility of the House to do oversight.
As you just mentioned, it's an issue that you've been considering for some time. 2 months ago, you and I had a conversation about starting impeachment proceedings in the House. And at the time, you said you supported Speaker Nancy Pelosi's decision not to pursue impeachment because you felt the person who most wanted impeachment was the president of the United States. And here's what you said.
What's becoming apparent is that the person in Washington most eager to begin impeachment proceedings is Donald Trump. He's trying to goad the Congress into beginning that process. And obviously he's made a calculation that that will suit his political agenda.
So, Congressman Welch, has the president goaded you into supporting impeachment?
I wouldn't put it that way, but his conduct certainly has. You know, what's changed for me since then, it's not so much what's in the Mueller report, because we knew that. It's two things. One, his absolute stonewalling on Congress. He won't produce any witness. He won't produce any documents, whether it pertains to what's going on at the southern border in the separation of children from their families, whether it's having Kellyanne Conway come in where the inspector general, not Congress, found that she was in gross violation of the Hatch Act. I mean, take your pick. And what the president is doing is completely making Congress irrelevant. And that is a way of him avoiding accountability and being above the law. So that's a separate issue. And what I had hoped that we would be able to do, but clearly are not going to be able to do with this president, is do the investigations and have accountability. And the second thing is that when he doubled down on his divisive rhetoric, talking about people going back, attacking people like with the Muslim ban, it was apparent to me that what we've seen of the president's conduct is going to get worse now that he's in reelection mode. So it was really a question of conscience for me as to whether I had to level with Vermonters with the own internal conclusion I made that whatever the president's intentions and whatever the politics are on this, I had to state that my conclusion was that it was time for me to state explicitly my conclusion that the president should be impeached.
A lot of people would love to talk to us about this topic today, so let's start off with Rick, who is calling from South Burlington. Hey, Rick, welcome to the program.
Hi. Hello, Peter, and hello, Bob. Trump's behavior is really an incredible threat to the very underpinnings of our democracy, and I support your efforts to bring that behavior to everybody's light as you proceed. But I do have a concern, and the concern is that if Trump, in response, is calls his people into the streets to support his position if impeachment begins to get serious, I worry that many of them are armed and bloodshed will begin. There'll be counter demonstrations, and it gives him a perfect excuse to impose martial law, which gives him sweeping powers over all kinds of our democratic institutions. That is what has led to the loss of democracy in other countries. And I strongly prefer that we let people know about his bad behavior and then vote him out of office.
Well, the ultimate decider will be the voters. I think that's going to be the fact. And the 2018 elections were largely about Donald Trump. I mean, the Democrats didn't talk about him that much. We talked about health care and wage stagnation and important issues that we've got to keep focusing on. But that election was largely, do you like the direction of the Trump presidency or not? And, of course, there was a real repudiation by voters of the Trump approach with the House shifting from Republican to Democrat. And, in fact, there were many Democrats who won in districts that President Trump had won in 2016. So that was the most important vote. And in fact, this next election will be voters deciding whether they want to, in effect, impeach Trump or put him out of office. And I believe we'll have that election.
Congressman, we've gotten comments from a number of people who share your opposition to President Trump. But they're worried that if the House goes down the road of impeachment, and of course the Republican-controlled Senate is very unlikely to impeach the president. Would you agree with that?
I do.
So they're very concerned that this becomes the issue of the 2020 election. There won't be discussion about tax cuts. There won't be discussion about immigration. There won't be discussion about energy policy. It's going to be impeachment all the time, and that's going to help energize, from their point of view, that's going to help energize the president's base. What do you say to those folks?
Well, that quote you played of me a couple of months ago shows that I definitely share that concern. And that's a valid concern. But I'd say two things. Number one, we have been able to pass significant legislation in a number of areas in the House. It runs into the brick wall in the Senate with Senator McConnell. So we will be doing this. What the media covers is another question. But just to go through some of the things, we've passed a budget. We avoided the debt default scenario that we've been through so often. Net neutrality. We passed a $15 minimum wage. We passed a bill to rejoin the Paris Climate Accords. We've passed voting rights legislation that's over in the Senate that had a lot of support from people like Jim Condos in the DREAM Act. So we've been doing this work steadily and regularly, and we'll keep it up. Drug price negotiation is something I think we'll take up when we return.
But I think what our listeners are saying is they listen to all of that stuff, and they'd like that to be the focus of the 2020 election. But they're concerned that once the House Judiciary Committee starts impeachment proceedings, all of that's going to get lost.
There's two things. One, I just couldn't stand by where I had come to the conclusion that the president was putting himself above the law and was violating his oath of office. So the politics of this, there's a lot of back and forth on it. Those concerns are concerns I've had. But for me, this was a call of conscience as to whether I could stand by when I thought we have this extreme behavior where all the institutions of democracy are under assault. The fake news, attacks on the press, attacks on judges. Attacks on judges because they're Mexican judges. I mean, the list goes on and on and on. And my worry is that what's imperiled are the guardrails of democracy. So my decision was to state that and to state that I held that position so firmly that I would support impeachment. Now, on the politics of it, I do think that we have to be able to walk and chew gum. Whatever is going to happen with impeachment, that'll be up to the Judiciary Committee. I'm on the Energy and Commerce Committee, the Intelligence Committee, and Oversight. So I'm going to have plenty of work to do that's substantive and not just about impeachment. The other thing is that you said it right. If there is impeachment in the House, and it's not, we don't know whether that will happen yet, this is Mitch McConnell's going to kill it. So that'll be, in my view, behind us, and the voters are going to have to make the big judgment. And our candidate, whoever that may be, is I absolutely think has to focus on those bread and butter issues about lowering the cost of health care, about environmental damage that's occurring while we ignore climate change, and so many other issues that are on the minds of Vermonters.
Let's go back to our callers and talk to Emil, who is calling from Montreal. Welcome to the program.
Hi. Hi. Yes, I'm a dual citizen, Canadian and American, I totally concur that Mr. Trump is a blot on the history of the presidency and an embarrassment to the United States. There's no question about it. But I think it's very bad strategy to focus on the impeachment, the process, because it's not going to happen, and it's going to be a wonderful advantage to Mr. Trump, who is very happy to sidestep other issues. He's very good at exploiting rifts, particularly within the Democratic Party. And I think the real issue is the Democratic Party going to get its act together and take, 18 out of those 20 or 24 possible candidates off and begin to create a viable candidacy for one or a few of those? So, as I say, I think the work towards impeachment is just simply it's very convenient for Trump. And I think virtue signaling that you think Mr. Trump is a dreadful piece of work, that's nice, but it's not going to advance. It's not going to advance any kind of a progressive agenda. And I think the effort should be made to get the Democratic House in order in terms of the presidential candidates.
Okay, Emil, thank you very much for your phone call. Along those lines, Congressman, I think you would know this number better than I do. I think there are 35 or 40 members of the House Democratic Caucus who represent districts that President Trump actually won in 2016. Does that sound about right?
Yeah, it does. And it really made the difference.
And so if there's a vote in the House on impeachment Would that vote put some of those members at risk?
I think it puts all of us potentially at risk because voters ultimately have to judge us. But there's enough in those folks have to – that's a big and tougher decision perhaps for some of those people, Bob. But, you know, there's a number of my colleagues who did win in those districts that have come out in favor of impeachment, and they're talking to their voters about it. Sean Casten from Illinois, he won a Republican seat and a few others. So – you know, for a lot of us, the politics of it, and that caller, I think, made a compelling case on the politics of it. We really came to a decision as to whether we were so apprehensive about what is happening to our democracy and how that's being intensified and the duty and the authority that a member of Congress has to state yes or no on impeachment, that we felt the obligation to speak up. Independent of the politics. Now, I do think that Mitch McConnell is not going to move on impeachment. So I don't know whether the Judiciary Committee will ultimately get to articles of impeachment. But we do have to do what that caller said. And that'll be done in our presidential campaign, where we have an agenda that focuses on the issues that are so important to working people and to the environment, lowering health care costs. These things are really what the future has to be about. But the other thing is we just can't get around the fact that President Trump has an extraordinary capacity to change the topic, impeachment or not. Whatever the tweet of the day is, that becomes the news of the day. And to some extent, you know, I question how it is that he was able to do it, but he does. And even if impeachment were completely off the table, there would still be that kind of divisive attacks from the president that I've been referencing earlier.
Just before we get to the Mueller conversation, let's talk to Kelly, who is calling from St. George. Hi, Kelly. Welcome to the program.
Hi. Thank you for having me. First, I just want to thank Peter Welch for his service in this tumultuous time. I fully support his charge to begin impeachment hearings. I think what's happening to the democracy and our institutions behind the scenes, not even what is made public in the news, is horrendous. And it's unfortunate that most of our political discourse plays out online and in the press, but we have systems in place. We have systems worth fighting for. I come from a career military family. And my husband and I have committed our lives to public service, and I just fully support his decision. Whether or not it proceeds to the Senate and is squashed there, it doesn't matter in my opinion. It has to go forward.
Kelly, thanks very much for your phone call. Congressman, Special Counsel Robert Mueller testified on Wednesday in front of the House Intelligence Committee. You're a member of that panel. You expressed concern that the Trump campaign in 2016 did not report its contacts with Russian efforts to influence the outcome of the election. Here's how you put it.
Have we established a new normal from this past campaign that is going to apply to future campaigns? So that if any one of us running for the U.S. House, any candidate for the U.S. Senate, any candidate for the presidency of the United States, aware that a hostile foreign power is trying to influence an election, has no duty to report that to the FBI or other authorities.
Well, I hope.
Go ahead.
I hope this is not the new normal, but I fear it is.
And would, in fact, have the ability, without fear of legal repercussion, to meet with agents of that foreign entity hostile to the American election?
I'm sorry, what is the question?
Is that an apprehension that you share with me?
Yes.
And that there would be no repercussions whatsoever to Russia if they did this again? And as you stated earlier, as we sit here, they're doing it now. Is that correct?
You're absolutely right.
Do you have any advice to this Congress as together what we should do to protect our electoral system and accept responsibility on our part to report to you or your successor when we're aware of hostile foreign engagement in our elections?
I would say the basis, the first line of defense really is the ability of the various agencies who have some piece of this to not only share information, but share expertise, share targets, and use the full resources that we have to address this problem.
Thank you, Director Mueller. I yield back.
Congressman, we got this email from Allison in Keene, New York, along these lines saying, I'm amazed more isn't being said about our electoral system being infiltrated by adversarial countries. Russia being involved in our elections is the single biggest threat to our democracy. When is Congress going to start pushing harder about this? Now, am I right? Did Mr. Mueller say on Wednesday that those foreign efforts to influence our political system, they're actually happening right now?
That's exactly what he said. And I share that writer's apprehension. What Director Mueller said is the Russians, as he was testifying, were acting to interfere with our elections. And there's a couple of ways in which they do it. There's a threat to them actually trying to infiltrate our balloting process. But what we saw in the Trump campaign, which was very disturbing, is this. The hostile foreign power, Russia, it's illegal for them to interfere, yet they did it. It's not a duty on the part of a candidate, in this case, candidate Trump, who's aware of their efforts to essentially look the other way and benefit from that illegal help. And that's pretty bizarre to me. You know, for instance, in the Trump campaign, Mr. Manafort provided detailed polling information to the Russians, knowing that Russia intended to do this social media misinformation campaign. That is a total cooperation on the part of Manafort, the Trump campaign manager in Russia. And, of course, that media campaign, according to Facebook, had hits affecting about 126 million people. So one of the things that I'm proposing, and I hope we get Republican support on this, is to impose on any of us who are candidates for federal office that we have a duty to report to the FBI when we are approached by a foreign power that wants to interfere in our election. And shockingly, there's no duty that any of us have to report. And the Trump campaign took advantage of that. They were totally glad to get the help from Russia. The hacking that they did and dumping of the Clinton emails, and of course the social media campaign that they aggressively pursued with the benefit of the internal polling information from battleground states that allowed, obviously, for the targeting of that media campaign.
What specific legislation do you think Congress should pass to address this situation and the integrity of our voting system?
Well, there's two things. One, I do think we have to impose on ourselves a duty to report when we're aware of foreign interference. But second, we passed in the House an election security bill. It would require the states to use paper ballots, have paper backup on any of our voting machines. It would fund states to upgrade their voting equipment and for training for local election officials in cybersecurity and conduct post-election night audits and make registration for voters easier. These were a number of things that Jim Condos, our Secretary of State, who was a leader nationally in this effort, was proposing. That's now sitting in the Senate. There was an effort on the part of the Senate to bring that up. Mitch McConnell killed that just yesterday. But the concern about the integrity of our ballot, what is more important to our democratic functioning than that? So we've got to protect the ballot. We've got legislation that would help do that. And we've got to thwart Russian interference. And when you have campaigns that know it's illegal for the Russians to get involved, but say, hey, this is going to help me, so I'll look the other way, that has to be illegal.
What's the likelihood, do you think, though, that the House will come back and address this issue again? Do you need to? Do you need to send something back over to the Senate in terms of safeguarding the integrity of elections?
Well, we do, and we sent a bill to the Senate. I mean, this is the issue where Mitch McConnell is the Senate leader, as you know, and I don't understand what he thinks his job is. But the way he defined it when President Obama was president was his job was to make certain that Obama was a one-term president. Now his definition of his job appears to be to do anything and everything to make Donald Trump a two-term president. You know, once we're elected to the House or the Senate, our job is to try to make progress for the country. And that means sometimes working with people you disagree with and a president you disagree with. But McConnell is all in. He wanted to stop anything that had Obama's name on it, and he basically wants to support anything that has Trump's name on it. And that's a real impediment to us solving problems together.
Congressman, we got this email from Dave, who would like to know, why don't we have a nonpartisan, independent expert commission looking into Russian efforts to influence the election, which are continuing in the 2020 election? What about that idea of nonpartisan, independent commission? Take a look at this and see what's going on.
Well, I think we know what's going on. I mean, Russia is doing it. The Mueller report was exhaustive in outlining what Russia did and how it did it. We know that's happening. And all the information that we're getting is that Iran's starting to do it. Other countries are trying to get in the game. And who knows what China is going to be doing. So we know what the problem is. So I don't think we do need another commission. I think the Mueller report really laid it out. I think what we need to do is take action here where we protect the ballot, where we require candidates to report. And where we have our intelligence agencies and the social media companies monitoring what are bogus websites and misinformation.
Let's go back to our callers and talk to Peggy, who's calling from Norwich. Hi, Peggy. Welcome to the program.
Hi, Bob and Peter. I'm thinking about, after the election, when Donald Trump has lost and then refuses to accept the results of the election, what can we do? Is there anything in the Constitution that makes a provision for this circumstance?
Well, you're worrying me with that apprehension. But, you know, what I've noticed that's so different in my term now than has been the case in my previous service in Congress, even when we had that enormous collapse, the biggest recession since the Great Depression, people are nervous. They're apprehensive. It's like the guardrails are down. People are nervous about whether people they love who happen to be Hispanic or happen to be a Muslim, that will those people be protected or will they not? And now you're expressing an apprehension that we wouldn't have a clean succession where the vote of the people was respected. Now, I don't think that's going to happen, and I certainly hope it is not going to happen. But our constitutional system, we would hope, would have enough resilience to deal with that in other situations that occur.
Congressman, I'm wondering if you could explain to us as best you can. You're a member of the Problem Solvers Group. That's a very bipartisan group of House members seeking solutions to some of the difficult issues facing the country. So you work with the Republicans quite a bit. I think you have a reputation for doing that. We got an email wondering, why aren't more Republicans in Congress opposing what President Trump is doing? I think in the resolution vote that you had recently, there were four Republicans who voted for it. What, I mean, with your Republican friends, the more moderate members of the party, do they talk about the difficulty of coming out against President Trump?
Well, they do. I mean, you're raising a really important point because we need to, when we're doing things that are really important, like protecting the guardrails of our democracy, both sides have to be involved. And when the president does something like that judge who ruled against him, who was of Mexican heritage and said it's a Mexican judge, and he just dismissed it as though that was the answer, we need both sides. We need Republicans to speak up and say that's crossing a line. And the reality for many of my colleagues is that privately they'll express dismay, but they are in districts where they fear politically because of the president's big popularity in their districts, what that'll do to them politically. And, of course, what we've seen with President Trump is that he goes after critics whose head comes out of the foxhole, he goes after them hard, very hard. And a lot of those folks have paid a political price for it. So I think it's that's really what's holding them back. But I keep reaching out. I mean, and I do everything I can to try to work with Republicans. And we got a couple of bipartisan drug pricing bills through Congress this year. They're stalled in the Senate. But I think I've got to keep reaching out. I've got to keep talking to them as much as I can. But they ultimately have to make their own decision.
Let's talk to Stephen in Burlington. Hey, Stephen, welcome to the program.
Thank you. My question is, okay, so the observation I'm hearing from some commentators is that the Republicans essentially have abandoned democracy. I think they see in the future that the demographics are working against them, and democracy doesn't work for them. So they're leaning hard toward more opportunistic ways of maintaining power, such as the gerrymandering, et cetera. I wonder if, Mr. Welch, if you think that it's a message that would be of benefit to the Democratic Party if they talked about the that leaning, that trending toward, against democracy, per se, as a principle.
Well, we've got to defend democracy. I actually think that politics should be focused on issues. And we've got a problem with the president. And in my view, as you know, I think he's really shattering the guardrails of democracy and our democratic institutions. And it's why I support impeachment. But I think fundamentally, and we've got to deal with that to be able to have a vibrant democracy. But I think we also have to acknowledge that there's an immense amount of cynicism and frustration on the part of the American people who see the political process not bringing down healthcare costs, not reducing carbon emissions, not creating rural opportunity. So I see that as something that we have to continue constantly to focus on. And as I mentioned earlier, we've passed a number of pieces of legislation that address those issues. Now they're stalled in the Senate. But I think in order to get credibility, we've got to demonstrate that we really care about the people who elect us and their day-to-day concerns. And in this next presidential election, there'll be a lot of talk about Trump behavior and him shattering norms. But I hope whoever our candidate is connects, frankly, better than Hillary did with people who haven't had a raise in 20 years.
Congressman, we've been talking about impeachment, the Mueller report. Some of our callers and writers would love to talk to you about some other subjects. We got this email from Rebecca, who would like to know where you stand on H.R. 763. That's the Energy Innovation and Carbon Dividend Act of 2019. Rebecca writes, the legislation would create financial incentives to move away from fossil fuels. It was put forth by the Citizens Climate Lobby and has advantages over other such financial incentives in that it's designed to attract bipartisan support and address the burden of such financial incentives that can be placed on low-income people. Are you familiar with that legislation? Do you support it?
I'm not familiar with the details of it, but I support aggressive efforts to address climate change. And you know, the basic reality is, and citizens know this, that the carbon emissions are going to destroy the planet, and we have to have a very aggressive effort to do that, and it has to be done immediately. And I favor a kind of all hands on deck approach to dealing with the transition we need to move from fossil fuels to clean energy. To energy efficiency that's important, incredibly important. And I see that as an opportunity not only to address a crisis, but also in taking on that challenge, we're going to create jobs. So that legislation I'm somewhat familiar with, but not in detail enough to answer specifically as to that. But the goals of that legislation I do support fully.
Would legislation like that inevitably include some sort of tax on carbon?
It could. You know, the big question of tax on carbon, which makes a lot of economic sense, where you're putting the price on carbon instead of having the effects of carbon, the damage that carbon does, be socialized and spread all across the economy. That makes some sense. But how do you do that in a way where folks who are driving and commuting long ways to and from work don't get hammered? And we saw what happened in France with them raising the gas price, in effect trying to do this, and the yellow shirt rebellion against that. So we've got to find practical ways that can implement policies that are going to radically reduce carbon emissions.
You've also got some legislation that would limit border patrol checkpoints. Right now, they can be operating 100 miles from the border. You'd like to restrict them to 25 miles. Why is that a good idea?
We've got to get the balance between securing our borders but protecting our constitutional rights. And that 100-mile search basically means that like 90% of Vermont would be subject to these random searches in the name of Border Patrol. It would be like 75% of the population of the United States would be affected by having that 100-mile radius. So what's the balance? That's the question. Border security, yes. Constitutional rights, yes. And Senator Leahy and I are supporting this legislation that would have the area restricted to 25 miles, which I think is quite reasonable.
What kind of support does that have from representatives who also come from border states and would be affected by it directly?
I think a lot of the issue for everybody is pretty much the same. We're on a border state. The southern border folks also have the concern about a secure border and constitutional rights. I mean, a lot of the real focus on border security right now, obviously, is at the southern border, and that is a crisis. But you know, the policies that our president is pursuing, where it included in your name and mine, separating children from families, something that was just shocking to me when I went to the border several months ago and saw children who didn't know where their parents were. I met with parents who didn't know where their son or daughter was. We've got a problem, but the solution can't be something like where we're going to do family separation or where we're going to be searching anywhere and everywhere, where we have a dragnet that affects the civil liberties and constitutional rights of American citizens.
What are the chances of this bill passing?
I think very remote with this president and with this Senate majority leader.
Let's go back to our callers and talk to Judy, who's calling from Calais. Hi, Judy. Welcome to the program.
Thank you, Representative Welch. I very much appreciate what you do for us. Excuse me. My question, I'll be quick, is I would like to know, I don't think impeachment would probably succeed during this administration's tenure, but if it should, Vice President Pence would become president, and wouldn't he, as Gerald Ford, pardon Trump? And what do you think about that?
I haven't thought about that. You know, this question of impeachment is – you can look at it from a political standpoint, but at a certain point and a lot of the callers pointed out that this might be favoring Trump. It's something he wanted, and it was an observation that, as Bob Kinzel pointed out, I made myself several months ago. But what I think fundamentally is the glue that keeps our country together is adherence to the Constitution. It's something we share in common and we all cherish. And more than anyone else, the President of the United States has to be the person that reminds us of that. And when a person has enormous power, like a president does, one of the qualities that we need in our leaders is restraint. They can't do things just because they can. They have to have the restraint that has been part of our constitutional system of checks and balances, where there's respect that others have a different point of view. and that you do have to work through a process where Congress gets to deliberate. And then our courts have an opportunity to say whether the law we passed is right or wrong. And I see the president is just disregarding that. And that's why I have taken this position that I have to stand up to protect that constitutional system. That's what's going to get us through this. So the politics of it, we can all discuss and debate. But the way I'm going to proceed, I've stated my position on impeachment and why I think it's important. But I'm also going to keep working every single day with Republicans on legislation. I'm going to keep showing up, as I did at the State House last night, to talk to Vermonters and listen to what their concerns are, what their aspirations are. And I'm going to do everything I can to make this government function.
Let's see if we can get a very quick call in from Garth in St. Johnsbury. Hi, Garth. We just have a little bit of time. What's your question?
Okay, well, I'll make it quick. I just think that the, with the Trump administration and Republicans unwilling to stop hacking from Russians, that is basically helping out their party to try to win re-election, and it's almost an indirectly criminal act. And then also, I was going to ask, with William Barr, if the Democrats take it in 2020 and we get a new attorney general, can we get the unredacted report that Mueller produced? And then the last thing is, with a sitting president that cannot be indicted while they're in the office, it's like a dictatorship. It doesn't make any sense. It's like a foreign country run by Kim Jong-un that you can't get the guy out if he's committing criminal acts. That needs to be changed.
All right, Garth, we got a couple of questions. We got just under a minute, Congressman.
Well, it's a good point. I mean, this question of not indicting a president, remember when candidate Trump famously said if he went out on Fifth Avenue and shot somebody, he'd still get voted in? Well, would we really not indict a person who was in office that did that? And so I think he's got a pretty good point. And accepting that hacking help, that illegal conduct of Russia, accepting that by the Trump campaign, I think is pretty appalling. You know, I don't know anybody in public life who other than that, who would do it, Republican or Democrat.
Congressman Peter Welch, it's been a great discussion of some very important issues in Washington. Many thanks for taking the time to be on the program today.
Well, thank you very much.